Hello, I'm Gareth, and this is the Somewhere on Earth podcast from our studio in London. Yep, happy holidays, folks. Now, around the table, I have a top lineup to look back on a year of technology. So expect some pretty lively chat and a few strident opinions. I hope so, because that makes good podcasting, doesn't it? So anyway, here goes. So let's meet our studio guests for today. First up, Suki Fuller recently won Computer Weekly's 2023 Most Influential Women in UK Technology. She's an analytical storyteller. Want to hear more about that. She's a host and much, much more. So, Suki, it's lovely to have you on the podcast. So what are you bringing to our conversation today? And I'm thinking a little bit about your interest in crime fiction and detective novels and how you're going to link that together with technology.
Connected data. It's always connected. People forget everything is connected.
In those clues, in that data. Oh, I can't wait to get into that. Also, we have one of our regular studio experts, in fact, both of them, but let's meet one of them to start with, and presenter's friend, Ghislaine Boddington. So, Ghislaine, how the goodness are you? It's good to see you and have you back on again.
Thank you, Gareth. It's lovely to be with you. And I am going to talk about climate change technologies, our biggest issues of our time, this human-induced interference that we're doing with the world's climate system.
All right, looking forward to that. And Angelica, I say I'm looking forward to you talking about it, not looking forward to the human-induced chaos that's going to reign.
Absolutely.
To get the disclaimers in. Angelica Mari is usually in Brazil, but seems to be, rather than enjoying the Sao Paulo summer, actually kind of choosing to be amidst the dank midwinter drizzle here in London. What might be staying with you from 2023 technology wise
apart from this lovely trip and my earphones, like wireless earphones, best thing I bought, best thing with
so
me
good.
2023.
Oh,
but apart from that is a mix of issues, both global and local to my part of the world. So global issues around AI regulation and all the shenanigans related to AI, and also AI regulations in Brazil and digital currency. And that has to do, one thing has to do with the other. So we're going to discuss that in a moment.
Oh, lovely. I think we'll get a podcast out of all that, won't we? We're going to be busy. All right. Lots to discuss right here on the Somewhere on Earth podcast. Right then, and Angelica, you're completely right about wireless headphones. I have some wireless earbuds and they are my single favourite piece of technology. Complete game changer. I've now managed to forget what it's like to have those wired earbuds which always just come unplugged when you even move your body slightly when you're trying to do something and listen to a podcast.
Can I just say, they're absolutely great, but horrid also because they're easily hackable.
Oh. Well, thanks for
Pretty much anything that's running on Bluetooth is going to be hackable. Sorry. Oh.
Now I hate my wireless earbuds. I'm not going to use them. I'm going to go back to the
wired
ones.
So illuminate us on that, Suki, please.
Right. Well, that was the podcast. You can join us on social media. No, we've got loads more to talk about. So, Suki, let's just get into it a little bit of your interest in like Agatha Christie, detective novels, your belief that everyone's out to get you, obviously, which I can fully understand where that comes from now. So I've never thought of crime fiction in that way, isn't it? It's like patterns in the data, it's clues, and guess what that reminds us of?
Agatha Christie, man, she was like the grand dame of clues. I mean, when you see something like Poirot and Miss Marples, you don't realize what you're doing. You don't realize when you're watching it, you know, you're watching the process of somebody who's got a problem and they're trying to fix it and they're trying to figure out the end game. And he's going around, he's collecting all the data, collecting all the information. He's then putting it together, collating it, organizing it, analyzing it, and voila, there's your killer. And people don't realize that is basically the whole process of the lean cycle.
Yeah, I guess so. And the training data into machine learning models.
Exactly. That is exactly. And as I tell people, you know, my background is intelligence, but it's the same thing. We have the intelligence cycle and the lean cycle. They sit on top of each other. It's just as long as you are pivoting and constant iteration, it's just a cog.
Yeah,
exactly. Constantly. Well, that's, you know, the world. Hello. It spins, right?
Yeah. You know, and so because your mother had a very big book collection, didn't she? And that's partly where you just thought, oh, where do we start?
I love my mom for that. Yeah. I shouldn't have been reading that stuff when I was like 8 years old. But, you know, I'm reading like Ian Fleming. It's like, oh, hello, Bond, a little risque. But, you know, you're reading and you don't actually recognize that the characters when you're that young are men or women. You just like the character. You just want to be that character. So, you know, I'm seeing Poirot and I'm going, oh, yeah, you know, I can go around and solve a mystery. You know, I'm seeing Bond. I'm like, I could do that. I'm seeing M. I can boss around Bond. You know, I'm seeing all those characters and they just appeal to me. The characteristics doesn't matter about the gender. Yeah. So you just take all those little pieces and you realize that's who you are. That makes up who you are. And I think a lot of people don't realize that we are little pieces of characters throughout our life.
Yes, I love that. I'm actually sort of sitting here trying to think of the characters that I'd want to be, or partly who I consider to be, and then we can have a long discussion about how I match up to them. It is a bit like those fun pub conversations about who would play you in a movie, and I always say Ewan McGregor. Anyway,
it has to do with motorcycle trips.
It's the motorcycle
world,
thing,
maybe.
Yeah, and those slightly boyish good looks. Anyway, whatever. Let's ask you another question, Seeker. I'm going to get myself out of trouble here. You won Computer Weekly's Most Influential Women in UK Technology Award, the 2023 award. A, congratulations. And B, what was the kind of citation then? You know, what did they... This is where I'm inviting you to be the opposite of modest. So why?
I was getting a little uncomfortable because as an intelligence analyst, we're supporters. We are the consigliers to, you know, the dawn. We are the one whispering in the ears of people that are in the C-suite. So to be out front, I don't mind being out front, but I don't like too much applause.
Yeah,
I just want to get it done, get the mission done, get help for people. But it's a public vote. So
well,
voila, I guess the public in the tech sector thought I was deserving. And I think when I've gone back and spoken to people afterwards and said, you know, I don't really think I deserve this, they said, do you know that I had a conversation with you and because of you, I went and did this? Or people that I've advised have said, do you know that, well, you know, you saved our company, even though we didn't come to you to save our company. We just came to you for some advice. You gave it and it actually saved our company. So it's little things, little nuggets like that. So I have an appreciation for that. And I want people to know more also about the intelligence field, because we're not all spies. You know, we have other jobs. There are people that support spies. Intelligence analysts support spies. And in the corporate sector, we don't spy at all. We have an ethical code.
All right. Yeah. So, Angelica.
Yeah, has the award actually made you take stock of your career, look back and feel like I've done a really great job? Because these are really nice things to hear and really inspirational.
I think sometimes I always feel I have days where I go, I really need to do more. Like I will see something happen and I feel like, oh no, I need to do more. There should be more women that should get jobs and positions like that and be able to keep it no matter what happens to their former boss. You know, it's like...
So you're referring to OpenAI shenanigans.
Yeah, and to explain to our dear listener, this is we happen to be recording this soon after. Do you remember that crazy weekend in November when it all kicked off at OpenAI? We're recording this podcast around then. Glenn, you remember it well because for us sitting here, it was only 2 days ago, but I think next month when people listen to this, it'll still be a conversation piece, won't it, Glenn?
And 2024, it'll still be there.
It's not going away in 2024. Do you agree, Glenn?
And it may well have, by the time that this programme is being listened to, changed massively again. But this polarisation between the open source and the money makers, the ones that want to make the money from it all. And we've got this polarisation happening also between the kind of the ethics and the morals behind it as well. So I think we're going to hear a lot more, absolutely a lot more. And there's some women's issues in there too, for sure.
And isn't it crazy, Suki, that a female leader is on the cover of one of the world's most influential tech publications? And like, yes, we made it. Like, we have a female leader in one of the companies that might be defining, like, the course of humanity. And then soon after, we see that it's not quite that. It's like one step forward, then 10 steps back.
Yeah. Yes. I think for me, when I saw her being pushed out recently, just even before this happened, I thought, oh, they're setting her up for a bigger role. And I think maybe there was some political maneuvering going on.
Yeah. And sorry, we should explain that we're talking about the, for a few moments only,
incoming
CEO of OpenAI.
Yeah.
And so what happened? They took her on, and then there was some talk about Sam Altman coming back, and they said, we don't need you anymore. So
they announced her.
Who we're talking about here. And
they announced Mira as the interim CEO. And so we knew that it was temporary. However, interim, and you've been in the company, usually you are the CEO. That's just sort of a title they give you. And even the last few months before, she had been lauded as really the person behind, you know, OpenAI.
She was the spokesperson.
She's been the spokesperson. You know, Altman has been doing the political route, but she was out there. And so it was really nice to see this happening. And finally, we're going, wow, you know, a woman out in front, and she's a technologist. That was what was so beautiful. She's not a marketing officer. No offense, marketers. But, you know, it was somebody who was technical. And then for them to do that, it's almost the way that always happens to women in leadership positions. You put us out there when there's a problem, and we come and fix it. And some guy comes and takes credit for it. Or when it goes badly, they get rid of the woman and they bring somebody in. But the way to fix that's already there.
Like Web Summit.
A woman comes in to do all the explaining
and make the apologies.
You know, fixing everything.
Isn't it problematic that she was announced as an interim CEO? Why interim?
Well, I think they were just massively filling in really fast, weren't they, before the weekend. And her name's Mila Murati.
We need to
remember also, because women lose names, actually. And in this situation, Mila Murati, she was there for 48 hours. Hopefully she will be fine. And you're right, Suki. She is a chief technology officer, which is quite rare, you know, for this amazing woman. And hopefully she will be fine. But I think what you're saying is absolutely right, Suki and Angelica. It's too often that women are brought in as a kind of plaster to cover the wound for a bit. And then as soon as it's gone, they get rid of them again. Yeah. And I actually do question why women take on those roles, actually. I'm like, I think I'd question it quite a lot if I was being offered that. What about you, Suki? Would you?
You know, it's sort of a double-edged sword, because you want to be out there to make sure that women are getting recognized, so that we are out there showing other women that this can be achieved. But at the same time, you're going, this is probably not going to look good. It's such a double-edged sword, because that's what you have right now with Linda. I won't even try for that last name, the new chief of Twitter or X. but that's pretty much, you know, it's really great that she's got that position, but you're essentially babysitting.
Okay.
The other problem I can see happening at the moment, and I was wondering what Angelica and Suki thought of this, but there's definitely a resurgence happening of all male panels. Yeah. And I've just noticed it since lockdown, gradually dripping back in. And a few colleagues, male colleagues, have come up to me recently to say, oh my God, I've been asked to be on this all male panel. I don't know what to do about it. I don't want to do it. Or there's only a female moderator, which is, don't get me wrong, that's important. But it, you know, really seriously, we do need to get this gender balance sorted in the tech sector. It's still not sorted.
Yeah, and I should just say, by the way, for the record, and importantly, that the ex-CEO is Linda Iaccolino. Yeah, Ghislaine, all male panels. Yeah, I mean, I refuse to take part in one.
That's good. Good, Gareth. And I think that's what I do tell my male friends is just say, you know, say, no, sorry, I can't be on, and suggest a few women to ask so that they wouldn't be just, you know, one woman, the moderator, or no women at all. So,
yeah. It is a tough balance for women taking part on panels where males are the majority as well. Yes. It's a tough spot.
I relish those.
Oh, I bet you do.
I relish those because I bring it up.
You are brilliant at it. You are brilliant, actually.
I will sit there and be like, oh, so I'm the token person. I check a lot of boxes for you. Unfortunately... I mean, I think we saw recently there was an incident on British television where a person was presenting, they were being interviewed and they were paid less than the male that was also being interviewed. I know, I'm pretty sure that you might remember the situation, Ghislaine, because it was horrendous to know that this woman was being interviewed on the exact same topic as the man.
Eug.
At the same time, and she was not paid and he was.
It's not good.
That is one of the areas that you're dealing with in Tech London Advocates, isn't it? The women in tech side is a lot of work on the gender pay gap.
Yes, that is. We know that's a topic that hits everybody and particularly women. And then when you add in the ethnicity pay gap, it's even more.
Ghislaine, climate change then, another important topic for 2024. So you gave us a little teaser there at the top, and you're certainly worried about this, and certainly in terms of, you know, the evolution of climate change technologies and so on. So what's on your mind as you think about climate change?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
AI is changing the game of business. Will you be on the winning team? I'm Jordan Wilson, the host of the Everyday AI podcast and your coach to help you learn the X's and O's of AI. Artificial intelligence isn't just a new player in the game, it's a new sport altogether. So if you don't quickly put AI into play, your competitors will run up the score. I've spent my whole life building winning teams, from coaching basketball to working with big players like Nike and Jordan Brand. My next move? Helping you win with Everyday AI. Listen wherever you get your podcasts or on everydayaipodcast.com. Let's tap into AI together and put points on the board.
Well, I just saw the other day that they're 99% certain now, scientists and climate scientists, that 2023 will be the hottest year ever on record. And we're hearing all these figures all the time. There's a lot in the press and on television, you know, and we've really got to face the fact that if the world's going to be sustainable and if the world's going to survive, so therefore we will survive with it, we've got to face that now. And actually, it's interesting with Suki being there, because of course, that most of this has been based on the fact that we can collect big data and we're collecting it more by the minute. Yeah. And weather forecasting has become this like massively bigger area of predictive large data sets. And it's never been so important, actually, as it is now, alerting people to climate change issues, floods, heat waves, forest fires, etc. So I'm keeping my eye a lot on particularly actually solar power, wind energy and hydropower, clean tech, climate tech, ones that actually, maybe I'm interested in ones that actually use natural free resources, which are creating cheaper and more efficient, and waste to energy, for example, ones that have got a kind of like natural solution with a technology edge added to them to make them more efficient, or ones that are a part of a circular economy thinking. So there is some amazing stuff happening all over the world. India with the National Solar Mission, and Korea using smart grid technologies, and Ethiopia is really working on hydropower potentials. But what I'm really interested in is the micro businesses ones. And I think, Gareth, you like these too, these special projects, tech projects, which are helping farmers adapt to changing weather patterns. And through various means, they're trying to give timely, accurate information through phones, you know, across many regions, when to plant, when to pick, etc., to help productivity. So it's not it's really helping the food side as well, you know, people being able to eat.
No, sure. And data ownership as well among some farmers who, you know, when you have a lot of land, that's a lot of capacity to put out sensors. So part of it is gathering your own data and then combining that with other data sets. And I'm sure Suki will know a lot more about this than me, but I love the idea of people being in a position, as for instance, Suki and or Galen, as sensors become cheaper, they become more ubiquitous, the wireless links to connect those sensors out in the fields back into some kind of computer, maybe in the farm buildings or whatever, you know, as all that improves, more data, better modeling, and more kind of micro modeling, if I can put it that way. So more specific analytics for farmers or people wherever they may be that can help them with their business. And in this case, of course, we're talking about agriculture.
I'm going to crush you all.
What is it? This is the second time now, I think.
It's actually the environmental impact of all the tech that needs to be developed. And when you are using these methods, you still have to develop tech. There still has to be, you know, the cloud is not the cloud. It needs to be housed somewhere. So there's the financial impact, the environmental impact of where we house that data.
Yes.
And the repercussions of that. I every time I look at, oh, this will be a great technology, I think, ooh, cobalt mining.
Ooh, e-waste.
You know, I think about
multiple
that.
Data
farms. And I think, oh, this will be really great. You know, we can use resources. Well, at the rate we're going, we won't even have natural water. We won't have anything that is considered natural resources because we're circular.
You have to make really tough choices as a tech decision maker because of the concentration of the tech sector, you might not have a lot of room for maneuver,
but,
right?
But where does that leave, for instance, a farmer who perhaps has at their fingertips potentially an affordable Internet of Things solution? And I don't just mean technology solutionism for the sake of it, but something that genuinely is going to give some data insights to help them better time sowing their crops and so on. And yet at the same time, balancing this that, the data's going into the cloud, which is energy intensive. There's an e-waste aspects to sensors that are being deployed in the fields. How does anybody really these days strike that balance? Because we want some social good and economic progress and, you know, just a decent, I say economic progress, really what I'm meaning here, Suki, is just a living, just a basic living for people out in increasingly challenged environments that could be improved by a bit of technology, but not just for the sake of the tech.
Unfortunately, the average person thinks about that. The average everyday person, you'll find people that are living in so-called emerging or developing countries that think more about the environmental impact than somebody who is running a 52 billion company.
Yes.
They say they think about it because that's what they're supposed to say, but they don't really. The first thing is the bottom line. And then the image and the perception from others of how does that impact the environment? Oh, we're going to greenwash. And so often that's happening. I mean, we shouldn't have the level of space exploration right now because how are we even going to do that? We haven't even figured out how to fix the waste here. And we're just putting it up even higher. And it's, I think about these things all the time. It's like,
agree. And I think, you know, here we are, we see so many smaller companies and particularly actually women founded companies and many of us as individuals making a big effort. And yet on the other side, absolutely, there we are looking at OpenAI and 100 million people downloading ChatGPT and using it like mad. And then actually, of course, ultimately, it will all end up being owned by a corporate and it's about money and greed. I really do agree with you, Suki.
Okay,
where is this balance going to happen? Where do you actually put allow the data to be used in a way?
But, and Galen, that was a lovely segue because I wanted to bring this onto AI because I know that's on Angelica's list of things to talk about from 2023 or things to be looking out for in the year ahead. When we think about things like synthetic genetic data, the situation where you come from, where you, in Sao Paulo, in Brazil. So what do you see, where do you see AI going in the year ahead? And what might you reflect on when you think about, you know, like AI regulations? It's all very balkanized, isn't it? And then there's this whole issue of synthetic data, which you may have to explain.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Angelica.
So synthetic data is data that is artificially created to resemble real world data. So this is a solution that companies are using to reduce the cost of gathering, cleaning, making sense out of real data. And AI models are very data hungry. Suki can comment on that at length. And synthetic data is being used as a solution to minimize the also the amount of personal data that is processed by AI applications. But on the other hand, like everything in tech, there is a downside. So synthetic data can lead to things like self-cannibalization of data, because generating synthetic data can relies on existing data sets, right? And these data sets have biases,
you know,
and limitations, right?
As I always say, with everything in tech, it all starts out with the person. So it's always everything that's ever created is biased.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter how many iterations, there's always going to be a thread of that in there.
It's which baked is why in. Baked in.
Metal detectors still suck for women because, you know, they haven't quite figured out that we have underwire bras. But, you know, men's belt buckles are fine.
Yeah, funny that. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
But it's, but when you're talking about AI, the one thing, especially when it comes to like our AI safety bill, I see all of these legislative actions taking place, but they never seem to go far enough. They always say, oh, we're going to start out, we're going to make it safe online. And then it started out, oh, we're going to make it safe online for children. Well, hello, why don't you just make it safe online? Why don't you have all that legislation? Because those kids are going to have it when they're kids. Why not keep it so when they grow up, it's still there? You know, they're going to grow up and go,
100%
oh, this agreed. Is not how it is. They're going to be bamboozled.
Which brings us, I suppose, conveniently to data protection and widening out that idea of online safety. And a lot of it begins and ends with data protection, Angelica. How do you see regulations evolving and kind of what trends have you been seeing in the last year or so?
Yeah, data protection goes hand in hand with what we're talking about, right? Also with cybersecurity. Brazil is the most hacked place on earth. Our data is all out there. The middle of the pandemic, the Ministry of Health leaked all of our data, all of our health records. So it's all out there.
I forgot about that one.
I asked I interviewed the bosses at the Data Protection Authority, and I said, why are you there? Are we just... Why? What do you work for? And
they said,
okay, so us being here is better than nothing. They literally said that. So it's quite horrifying, right, to hear that. But I'm keeping an eye on the things like around AI from a global and local level. So synthetic data use is one thing. Also the concerns that are being raised by some experts along the lines of what you're talking about, Suki, around the sort of balkanization of AI regulations. So you have US taking a really relaxed approach, more around guidelines and less about regulations. So you do your own thing, and we're just going to say,
you
might do this and that
company,
to be
right?
on the safe side. And you have Europe, there's been always more stringent, and places like Canada and Australia focusing on ethical AI, and places like South Korea and Japan going full on around like tech advancement and how we can build economic competitiveness and Brazil sitting on the fence. We're just going to see what happens.
And all this is Brazil, actually, the central bank in Brazil is launching a digital currency.
Yeah, that's right.
What's going on there? Is that going to go all right?
I guess we could call that, instead of gangster paradise, hacker's paradise. Jeez. It's just waiting for it to happen.
What the government says is that it's pretty much the opposite, because it's a central bank digital currency. So it's run by the central bank. So it's nothing. It's run by them, and it has some elements of crypto like blockchain. So I'll give an example how this works. So right now, buying a secondhand car, like in the UK, have you bought a car?
Not in this country.
It's a very fraught process. Ghislain is hearing us here. Everyone who's bought a secondhand item, there's like a large ticket item, is always like a difficult process. In Brazil, you have to pay for a car and then hope that the seller will transfer the car to your name, right? So with the digital real, like digital currency, you tokenize the car, so you turn the car into a token, and then all the conditions have to be fulfilled. So as a buyer, you need to pay for it, and as a seller, you need to transfer the car to the buyer's name. So this is what the central bank is saying they will facilitate, the kind of transaction they will facilitate.
Ghislain, so, you sound intrigued.
Yes, I mean, I'd like to know more about what Suki thinks about tokens, actually, because to be honest with you, I don't get it. Yeah, so maybe it would be good to hear your take on this token, the whole concept of tokens.
It's kind of highly ironic, because for somebody who's in tech and loves tech, so many things about it that are beautiful. Sometimes I look at some of the areas that have been developed and I go, that's not decentralized. I don't care what anybody says. You know, they say, oh, we want to decentralize financing. You can't. You really cannot do that 100%. I mean, either now you're saying the central bank, just the name of the bank anyways, but the fact that they're saying, oh, we want to make this a lot more easily transactable. Yeah, you're basically just moving one area from being actually in a physical location to a digital location, but it's still centralized.
And it moves us into a surveillance kind of territory, doesn't
everything, it? Everything about it is surveillance enhancement. Oh, we won't even go there. That's one of my topics. Oh. But
funny enough, I wanted to end there. But, well, in fact, well, I'll tell you what, because we need to wrap up quite soon. And I did want to not finish this podcast before I asked you a little bit about what you do, because you gave us some lovely clues there at the beginning saying, well, I'm not a spy myself, but of course, we do work with intelligence agencies and so on. And I think every listener, me included, is thinking, just ask, what does Suki actually do? It sounds fascinating. So I've saved it till last. What do you do?
My easy explanation is I tell the story of data. That's what analytical storyteller means. So as I said, I gather information, I collate it, organize it, analyze it, and give that actionable insight, actionable intelligence to a decision maker, and they then use it for whatever they need to.
And so what kind of data or intelligence? There's probably stuff that you're not allowed to tell us.
Yes, I can. I mean,
sure, just tell us.
You know,
then,
I've worked in different sectors. So I've been in the military. I've been in the private sector where I am now. And, you know, and you do your stint in national security. But in the private sector, you're doing anything from some of the most hilarious things, like trying to find out the ingredients to somebody's new toothpaste or the design of their box, you know, for a new toothpaste, to understanding the therapeutic area that a pharmaceutical company is going into, you know, like, oh, are they going to make the next Lipitor? You know, are they going to make the next smoking cessation drug? You know, It can be anything.
What, so but, like kind of espionage-y kind of
No, thing. But here's the thing. We use open source, you use human sources. You can use information that's anywhere in the world, but you cannot spy. You cannot dumpster dive. You can't go to somebody's building. You can't do the things, you know, put somebody in a room and torture them to get the information, you know, James Bond style.
All that
Bond
stuff you
style.
Read about when you were a kid. You yeah, can't do you know, that in your I day mean, job.
It's not as exciting and glamorous,
I know,
right?
I really am. I've often thought about it. You know, I've looked at an executive going, you know, I just asked you a question. You didn't tell me the answer. I think I'm going to pull your fingernails out.
I think on that.
On that note.
We're going to end. That's such a good, brilliant ending. So I'm so glad I found out more about what you do as well. Suki, thank you so much, folks. You've been listening to Suki Fuller there. And, of course, our regulars, my presenters, friends, love them, Angelica Murray and Ghislaine Boddington. And that's it for today. Just let's do the... I love doing the credits, actually. Before we get there, I remind you how you can stay in touch as well. hello@somewhereonearth.co. That's the email address. On WhatsApp, we're code 44 74 86 329 484, and on pretty much most so of the main social media platforms that you're likely to use, then just look for us via Soap Text. That's with an E. So S-O-E-P stands for Somewhere on Earth Podcast Tech. Soap Tech. And you can find us. We're ever so friendly and we like hearing from you. So let's fill 2024 with lots of your comments and questions, confessions, and anything else you want to pick us up on, dear listener. And there you go. Thank you all. And have a lovely 2024. From me, Gareth Mitchell, and all of us on the team here, including the people the other side of the glass who make this sound so lovely every time. So the audio team are Keziah Wenham Kenyon and John Cronin here at Lanson's Team Farner. Our production manager is Liz Toohey. The editor's Anya Liftarovich. See you throughout 2024, folks. Be good. Bye-bye.